and gentlemen, I am Christian Henri, the green-eyed man, and joining me is not Emma, but another fellow unhappy 18 to 35-year-old, Donovan Morgan Grant.
Let's put a pin in that.
Yeah. And we're here to discuss the forgotten 2008 Disney film, Bolt. We were just discussing this literally a minute ago, but for those who weren't there, what is your history with this film at all, if indeed you have one?
Okay, so in 2008, this movie came out. It was 2008, correct?
Yeah, it actually came out the same week as Quantum of Solace and Twilight.
Like, yeah, I didn't see Twilight in theaters, but I definitely saw Quantum of Solace, and it's the same year as The Dark Knight. You know, I'm in college, so I didn't watch this movie.
That's exactly. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, I mean, like straight up, this is the first time I'm watching this film. By this point, because it's been a while since, like, you know, the last one we did was a Goofy movie, but that was sort of a that was not exactly in order. No. Like, Tarzan was not the last Disney movie I saw in theaters, but like that was kind of like generally the end of my era. Mm-hmm. Many of the films that you've been reviewing since then, I've not seen. I certainly haven't seen in theaters. And the next movie, I don't know if it's the next movie you're about to talk about, but like next year or the following year is A Princess and the Frog. And I remember when, yep, I did see that in theaters as the first Disney movie I had seen in several years. Ooh. So this is very much like, I mean, it's surprising to me that like I actually did see Dinosaurs, the theaters, but this one, I just, not that I would have seen this movie, but like this is absolutely kind of like me shooting in the dark in regards to any some sort of nostalgia, because I don't have any nostalgia for this film.
I'm in the exact same boat. I mean, we're in college at the same time. I was too busy with college, and it was the year of The Dark Knight, so I was basically up to my eyeballs in that, as well as the usual college stuff, you know, getting drunk and getting laid.
Hell yeah.
I was aware it came out, but I don't remember if I saw any trailers or any promotion, and I don't know if I don't know. I think at some point before actually seeing it, I clocked that he wasn't really like a dog with superpowers. I think there's some other review I saw. I saw this like maybe 10-ish years ago on Netflix, just like, I haven't seen this Disney film. Like, just for completest reasons, I'll see it. And it didn't leave a huge impression on me that time. But getting quickly to the production, this was originally going to be directed by Chris Sanders and Dean DeBleu, the directors of Lilo and Stitch, and later the How to Train Your Dragon films. And there's a few differences. Like, he was going to be a film star, and the film was titled American Dog, but he was going to wander the Nevada desert with a testy one-eyed cat and a gigantic radioactive rabbit for some reason, all while still believing he's on TV.
That's different.
Yeah. But Disney acquired Pixar in 2006. John Lasseter took over as the chief creative officer. Some of the plot points obviously were shaved off, including one involving... Okay, according to Wikipedia, there was going to be a radioactive Girl Scout zombie serial killer.
What?
Really? I don't know what Chris Sanders and Dean DeBleu are smoking. But
Whatever it was at once...
Yeah, but they were let go of the project eventually in late 2006, along with 160 other employees in the animation department. And Chris Williams and Byron Howard are brought on, and they're the future co-directors of a bunch of upcoming 3D animated Disney films like Tangled and Zootopia and Encanto. This is a directorial debut for both of them, and it's here that like Bolt got his eventual name and design, and the setting was actually shifted away from the Southwest because John Lasseter didn't want to be too similar to Cars, which came out a few years earlier, which he directed. And apparently the film's look in places is based on Edward Hopper's paintings. Are you aware of him or Nighthawks?
Yeah. I don't know if I would have gotten that at all. I feel that this movie, I was actually kind of trying to pay attention to the sort of like art style, and I wasn't picking up on anything fairly distinct.
Yeah, it didn't stick out to me the first two times I saw it, because this is actually one I saw three times in preparation for this, because the second time I I wasn't like paying enough attention. But some of the background scenes, especially when they're going through the country, they look like they're, I'm sure they're digitally painted, but they have like the look of brush strokes on them rather than going for actual realism. I don't know if it necessarily sticks out to me as Edward Hopper-esque, but the main thing I think of it with Edward Hopper is the Nighthawks painting.
Yeah, exactly.
Which has been homaged and parodied lots of times, including on The Simpsons and by Darwin Cook.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. Anything else before we pop into the plot?
I mean, I had to remember, because I am not great. I really can't distinguish the difference between, because like, we're now in the 3D era. This is the first like 3D Disney animated film I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I can't distinguish what makes a Disney movie and a Pixar movie. Like, I don't know why is one out of the other.
I think it's fair to say they're still sort of finding their feet. I will say this is much better animated than the previous two digitally animated Disney films, but the concept of it is kind of Pixar-esque. Like it's kind of actually rather Toy Story-esque, except from with Buzz.
We'll get into that.
Is it like if Buzz was the main character rather than Woody?
Yeah, but I mean, I was thinking about it because this is 4 years after one of my favorite movies, period, like animated or not, Incredibles. Mm-hmm. But I know that was like one of Pixar's big movies, so that doesn't like, even though it's Disney movie, doesn't count as Disney movie. Like I don't know if you've ever actually gone over this in your episodes, but like that kind of trips me up whenever I kind of run into that.
Well, what's confusing for me is like, even though I think Pixar like has never fully been like, at least early on, wasn't fully owned by Disney. I always remember like the Disney castle at the beginning. I think Disney has always been their distributor. So they're sort of joined at the hip.
Yeah, exactly. Like Incredibles and Turning Red are like, I think of those as Disney. I know they're Pixar, but I also think of those as Disney movies, and I don't know why I shouldn't.
And actually, I don't know if I've mentioned this in the podcast before, but in 2012, there were a lot of people confused about Brave and Wreck-It Ralph, because Brave was a Pixar film, but people thought it was a Disney animated one because it was about a princess, whereas Wreck-It Ralph is a very Pixar concept, like a video game character, like breaking out of like their world. That seems like kind of in the lines of Toy Story, but it was released and created by Disney Animation. So there is some definite blurring in terms of, well, some crossover between the two here and there. Well, apart from things like Frozen or Moana, which are a little more traditional.
So, yes. If there's a princess, it's got to be Disney, right?
Yeah. And I will say this most recent and last of what I call the Disney pet protagonist films. So like there are parts here and there that remind me of like Lady and the Tramp or like 101 Dalmatians. So that is like a, they've gone to the well a few times. Anything else before we dive in?
I don't think so. So let's spend the next 20 minutes to this film.
It'd be nice if it was only 20 minutes. I fear it'll be too long just because I take down so many notes. But anyway, lights, camera, action.
Hello, hairballs.
You may have won today, Bolt. But in the end, we will get your little penny.
Not likely, Cat, for you've chosen to follow the path of evil. Ultimately, it will destroy you, along with your fiendish puppet master.
Wow. I know, right? Okay, what's this? She's a goner, dog. The green-eyed man has a plan, and soon he will execute it.
Yeah, and then he will execute her.
Nice.
I would super bark you both back into the hole you crawled out of, but I need you alive, because I've got a little message for you to take back to your green-eyed man. You tell him his old friend Bolt said he better...
Is it long?
Is what long?
The message? Is it a long message? Because I have a horrible memory.
Yeah, I'll make it brief, all right? You tell him I said I'm
gonna...
You
know what? Why don't we do this? You remember the first half of the message, and then I'll remember the second, and then we can pass it on to the green-eyed man together.
Now, I don't care how the message is translated, all right? Just do it, okay? Tell the green-eyed man that I will not sleep. I will not rest until my penny is safe from his evil clutches. You tell the green-eyed man that freaking...
Whoa. Way too many words. I was like, what? And then I was like, huh? And then I got a little bored and something about clutches. Anyway, I'll do my best. Ciao.
By the way, huge fan. Love it. Love you. Gotta go. Thank you.
Get back here, you sick, revolting, loathsome little...
Dogs.
Cats.
We open up this pet shop somewhere opening, and we see Puppy Bolt. He is this... I pull out the breed here. So he's an actual breed. He's a white Swiss shepherd dog, but we see him as a puppy playing with this squeaky carrot toy at a pet shop. A little girl comes there, and it's basically love at first sight, and she adopts him. She's voiced by Chloe Grace Moretz, fucking hit girl.
Oh, and... you know what? Because I know who plays her later in the film, so I forgot that, hit girl, fresh. Is this before?
It's like two years before.
Wow, that's
pretty cool. I think she's credited as Chloe Moretz.
Interesting.
But basically, she adopts him. They're, like I said, love at first sight. Not that way, people. She puts on a collar with Bolt already on the collar. So is the inference that she's choosing the dog for the show, perhaps?
You know, it's very unclear. I don't know if it's like a Snowball 2 kind of thing where like she needs a replacement Bolt or what.
We'll talk about replacement Bolts later. But this is a very sweet scene of them. He's a cute puppy, so obviously it's adorable. But suddenly the screen goes dark. The music gets all serious 5 years later. This is 24 style font. The girl is older. She's talking on the phone with her dad. Her dad says, I'm not going to be home from work. I'm going to be away for a while. He all but says that he's been kidnapped. But he says, don't go home. Bolt will help you. I've altered his DNA. There's sort of the sequence of him being tested on in a lab and this sort of DNA sequence of his DNA being altered, just like the X-Men credits and in the first Spider-Man film. They have a sequence like that when after Peter Parker's been bitten by the spider. Reminded me of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Bolt, the dog, is basically turned into a mix between Flash and Crypto, the super dog.
Nice reference.
Yeah. Did he get the Bolt logo after the experiment?
During the, intro origin sequence, it ends with like the lightning bolt tattoo on his body. And it's like Bolt. And then it cuts to like the scene in progress.
Oh yeah, and it cuts to like basically the title card of the movie the literal dog tag, the lightning bolt. But basically, we learn that the father has been kidnapped by an evil genius with one evil cat eye called Dr. Calico, who's voiced by Malcolm McDowell. Yay, Metallo.
Oh yes,
he's speaking with a tattooed headed villain who I'm pretty sure is voiced by Phil Lamar because he is in the credits and his voice is pretty similar to his Green Lantern voice. But basically, he talks with him, and he's being overlooked. Penny, the girl in Bolt, are like viewing some meeting between Dr. Calico and this other villain on the rooftop, and says, "I'm gonna deliver the package so I can make the scientist talk." And it turns out the package is Penny, and he sends this thug to try to kidnap her. And Bolt, basically, this whole chase of like showcasing Bolt's spoilers, quote unquote, superpowers because he. He headbutts the Batman's car into the air, actually kind of like the Dark Knight with the tumbler, like throwing that around the garbage truck. They interrogate the baddie over the edge of a bridge with Bolt holding the car, holding the baddie over the edge of a bridge. And it turns out her father's in Bolivia and there are all these choppers that start descending upon her. There's this evil organization with the villain, we should say, Dr. Calco. He has a pet. These two pet cats, and their logo is like a green, like a slit green cat eye. And these goons are following her on motorcycles to speed up. Penny's on the sort of motorized scooter, and she with Bolt sort of like dragging her along on the leash, and she says zoom zoom, and he basically runs as fast as the Flash, so they can outmaneuver him. But there's like this various action set pieces like with this explosive magnetic frisbee that he gets rid of. He has laser eyes. Does Crypto have laser eyes?
Yeah. Crypto has all the powers that Superman has.
Yeah, he can't fly, but he can jump around very quickly. There's this slowed down shot of him jumping over a helicopter from three different angles. And basically they approach the airport because they're trying to reach a plane for Bolivia, but there's this whole motorcade of enemy choppers, vans, and motorcycles that gets in their way. So they stop. Penny says, Bolt, speak. Bolt thrusts one of his foot forward, moves off and back, crouches in this pose, and uses a super bark, which is, I don't know if Kryptonite has this power, but it's kind of like when the Hulk claps his hands and it creates this sonic wave that knocks aside all these vehicles and disables all these goons. And Penny and Bolt walk over unopposed, and it turns out all of this was a soundstage, and they're walking towards a trailer. And she takes, I guess, I don't think this term was used then, but she takes an ussy of them, you know, a plural of a selfie.
Yeah, not a Kodak camera or whatever, but
yeah, a very old Kodak like camera. So here's a question: are we this opening scene? It's obviously very realistic, like real helicopter, quote unquote, real helicopters exploding, the henchman getting injured. Are we supposed to view this as through Bolt's eyes, or is this supposed to be in keeping with it being a twist?
That's a good question, because a persistent question I had throughout the movie is that if the character of Bolt, I don't think you mind that I'm talking about this right now, if the character of Bolt believes all this to be real, because I know that the director mentioned that they try to do all this in one take on the kind of stuff, but there's so much necessary artifice to kind of pull all this together, then how do they like account for so many things, and how does he not at least perceive or see that they're like, you know, kind of like rigging all these kinds of things?
Yeah. Because
I don't know if it's directed, if we watch this a second time and see this is all in his head, I don't think the direction leads us to understand that. To me, it feels like all that we see is just perfect filmmaking because it all looks so real, which begs the question that I was begging throughout the film.
Okay. Yeah, I think maybe we are supposed to have, but I think I wish that you could have done something like change the aspect ratio as he goes into the trailer, or like change the lighting or something like that, or kept maybe something with the music. Because otherwise it just feels like this huge action scene at the beginning with, oh, this big twist that doesn't work if it looks so realistic. Like the henchmen look to be legitimately dying, and the vehicles are a TV show.
Yeah, there's a kill count if this were real.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think even like a big budget TV show. I think The Flash, for example, like a big budget action show like that, the vehicles and henchmen stuff, they would be like mostly CGI and like stunt doubles and stuff like that. There's a scene later that they film where they make it very clear that's the case, but it would have been nice if either they had changed the aspect ratio or something like that at the end, so like we're clued in that what we're seeing isn't real, or if there was like little signs here and there, like maybe people who are obvious stuntmen, or like not like a boom mic. I did go back to like the super bark scene, and the boom mic isn't there in the shot, but if you like saw somebody holding a camera in the background that wasn't supposed to be there. The question of realism aside, any thoughts about the opening?
Yeah, I got some thoughts about the opening. I've never seen this movie before, and I didn't really know at all going into it what the plot was. I truly didn't. I didn't even know until the credits that John Travolta was voicing Bolt. So I was just watching it very, very straightforward. And when it cut to, as you aptly described, 24, kind of like, you know, directed sequence of, you know, like we must get the package, and like, you know, all of a sudden the dog has superpowers. I was thinking to myself, this is horny shit. and you know, I wasn't sitting there like, you know, they're so stupid and I hate it, but it was like this is a kid's movie, and I was confident that even at age 19 it really wouldn't have worked on me. Understanding that it when they reveal that it is a set, okay, so this is a bit more clever than I was anticipating, because they got me. They straight up tricked me. I bought Hook, Line, and Sinker that it was really happening. So now that like I understand that it was a fake out, it's okay. I mean, again, like I think what I'm going to be saying a lot is that like this feels like a perfectly decent kids movie, and so I wasn't thrilled greatly. Mm-hmm. And like the action element of it didn't really hook me because it wasn't particularly anything too special, mm-hmm. but it didn't like repel me either. I was just kind of like, you know, seeing how things were playing out. So it did, I mean, at the very, the most thing I can say about it is that it fooled me. It straight up did fool me, but mm-hmm. I wasn't loving it when before it fooled me.
Okay. Fair enough. So we go to the studio, like the set descends, Bolt returns in his trailer and we meet, we only get him a few times. We see the director, he notes the boom mic and he complains about it, even though it could very easily be removed by pixels, I guess.
I was going to say the same thing. Like that's not going to be any problem to do.
Yeah. It is a very over, both abusive and overly elaborate scheme. Like you'd think this dog would be aware of like all the people on set with the cameras and stuff like that. I mean, you know, dogs can like all these smells. It's kind of a wonder that he is kept in character this easily and with a sort of Truman Show-like setup. They can anticipate
how his character would react to evil in this way. Like, I don't want to ask too many questions.
Yeah.
But I was asking a few of them. Like, wait a minute. I mean, like, you know, especially near the end with, like, you know, his senses, a dog's naturally heightened sense mm-hmm. of hearing and smelling. Yeah, I feel that, like, he wouldn't be super fooled. Like, how long have I been doing this, you know?
Yeah. I think he'd have some sort of sensory overload, but I don't know how dogs are trained for films. Or if I think now they just use, like, CGI ones, like, to some extent.
What was that Harrison Ford movie?
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking. It was Call of the Wild. I didn't see it, but I heard it.
It was a CGI dog.
Yeah. And was worse for it, apparently. But anyway, James Lipton, who voices this potential director, although for a while I thought it was James Woods.
I didn't know until the credits it was James Lipton. And I really enjoyed James Lipton. This is a couple years before he passed. Or actually, no, he passed in 2020. Yeah. But a lot of these voices, I was like, oh gosh, who is that? The only voice I knew like instantly was Malcolm McDowell. Everyone else, I just had to like kind of wait and confusion yeah. until the credits, but I didn't click that it was him.
Yeah, but he like freaks out over it, and there's like several people that visit him like behind the set, and one of them is Mindy from the network, and she like says, what does it matter if it's a bootleg? And he does an awful mansplaining speech about how Bolt believes it's all real. If the dog believes it's real, then the audience will believe it's real. And he refers to her as Mindy from the network, and although she's also not presented as a nice person, I do love that Mindy from the network is completely unfazed by this and threatens to pull the show. Because apparently it's a stupid show, as you sort of alluded to, and its ratings are declining and it's predictable and the 18-35 demographic, whatever, is not happy with it.
Which is funny because like it honestly feels like a show even 2008 that would have been made for kids, like because yeah. they would have had like you know. Kind of quote unquote action shows for kids in live action around the time. They had those a lot in the 90s, like Space Cases and stuff. So the idea that like our 18-35 demographic is losing interest is like, yeah, because your writing is not great. I think it's weird to me that like, I mean, that this guy, like, if the dog believes it, then we can make the show. It's like, especially because like, you know, later on they replace him so easily. It's like, I think this is a crazy person. And I don't know if Mindy is cognizant of that, that the director is actually insane.
I think there is an element of that. He's like he's an artiste. He's pretentious, or he's an auteur or whatever. But anyway, Bolt it remains in character as like the set is wrapping up. Penny has to depart. For some, we meet her even douchier agent, who's even worse than the director.
Real quick. I actually had this question like 5 minutes ago, and I wanted to wait until we had this bit. Mm-hmm. So the girl's name is Penny.
Yeah,
that's her real name, and also the character that she plays, that's her name too.
Apparently,
that's a little funnily convenient.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think if there's any major examples of. I know Tom Cruise has a thing where he plays a lot of characters called Jack, but I'm trying to think of. Any other
In I know throughout the '90s, at least the early '90s, Jackie Chan movies when they were kind of dubbed over to America, the characters' names were just Jackie. I know for a fact that's in like I don't know if it's in like Mr. Nice Guy, maybe Rumble in the Bronx, but like you know whatever names they were in the original China, like they're just it's just the guy's called Jackie.
I'm sure I'll think of one at some point, but for example, there's been nobody called James who's played James Bond so far, or nobody called Peter who's been Spider-Man yet. I'm sure there are examples, but anyway, hell, maybe that's part of the illusion, the fact that Penny is both the name of the character and the name of the actor, so that Bolt is none the wiser.
Benedict Wong. That's a really funny thing. Is like, oh yes, Benedict Wong, our friend and actor, who we just disrespect by calling him by his surname every time we say action.
Well, remember there's two Benedicts in the film also.
That's true. That's true.
But
yeah.
Apparently, well, I think Benedict Cumberbatch is a bigger actor anyway. But anyway, Penny wants to take Bolt home for the weekend, but her douchey agent stymies it. She's like, he's very passive aggressive. He says, "Oh no, we have to take you to this teen magazine photo shoot." It's one of those like administrative things where he doesn't say no, but he says, "We'll put a pin in it," which is this code for no, or shorthand for it.
Yeah, he tries to pacify her. But his kind of like disrespect of her is just so visible that they understand that he's not serious.
Yeah. Her mother like accompanies her here and there, and it's clear that there's a payoff to that later, but I think she can tell that he's. Yeah. By the way, everybody leaves from the set except for Bolt and the cats. And the cats are aware that it's a show. And the lead one, by the way, is voiced by Diedrich Bader.
Oh, yes, Batman himself.
Yeah, so that's a pleasant surprise. So they are able to come and go in their crates for some reason, and they go to the sunroof of the trailer that Bolt's in, and they taunt him like as if they're Dr. Caligo's henchmen. And I guess we'll bring up now, what do you think of Bolt as voiced by John Travolta, of all people?
I mean, honestly, I didn't think it was John Travolta because the idea of I have a John Travolta is a rather disrespectful impression, you know, like oh, I'm in a Disney movie, oh jeez. Like, I know that he realistically doesn't talk like that, but like, I truly like you may even show me before, and I think I forgot, but like when it said in the end credits John Travolta as Bolt, I was like, actually, I had to rewind to a clip of the movie to kind of like listen to it out. I guess I'm just not that familiar with him. As an actor, enough. I mean, I've definitely seen him in films, but like, I guess I'm not familiar with his voice to really have pegged that before. Mm-hmm. But I thought he did a perfectly solid job. What about you?
Yeah, it's probably the most straight-laced character he's ever played because, like, Pulp Fiction, he's like an assassin and he's the villain of the first
Face-off.
Punisher. Well, not the first Punisher film, the Thomas Jane one.
The Tom Jane one.
And even like when he's playing like Danny Zuko in Grease or playing the main guy in Saturday Night Live, he is a little I think sleazy is kind of the right word. There's a little bit of smarminess to him, but Bolt is like this very straight laced, almost like heroic type, almost in the vein of like Cyclops or Superman. Although he hates cats at this point because all the cats he knows are evil. The less experienced cat is a big fan of him. He's a celebrity even then. But we then go to the second scene. I do like the second scene. It's very clear that it's on a silent stage. You see like people with boom mics in the background as they're going through this fake jungle. They show like what I'm pretty sure are similar to real like tricks in like action shows. You know, like rubber bar, like some guy operating this thing where these rubber bars bend and like. The henchmen like falling on a mattress off camera as they're basically Penny and Calico are in quote unquote oblivion infiltrating the base where the father is. And it turns out it's a trap. They go to this room with a supercomputer. Dr. Calico, such the Green Eyed Man, he snatches Penny in this fridge like device hanging from the helicopter. Bolt is like left behind because basically the director has consented to end the season on a cliffhanger, like to raise ratings, but Bolt obviously thinks it's real. He's isolated from Penny by this animal handler, and he somehow escapes. He get there's a few like Rube Goldberg like contrivances in this, but he thinks she's in this porta potty that has like the enemy logo on it, and he gets knocked into a cardboard box of styrofoam packing peanuts, which is shipped to New York. Somehow he doesn't suffocate in this box after being knocked out there for hours, but whatever. Anyway, the box ends up in New York City. The shipping handler breaks it open, and Bolt breaks out. He discovers he's in the city, and he discovers that his superpowers, quote-unquote, aren't working. Like, he tries to ram through this chain-link fence. It won't budge.
Star Command, why won't they answer?
Exactly. This is very much like Buzz realizing that he's a toy. And there's a three, like with the shot of the helicopter, there's this three-angled shot of him failing to leap over a bit of I think the pavement is crushed or something like that. It's...
Yeah, they're kind of doing construction on the sidewalk.
Yeah, He tries to leap over that, but completely fails. And he follows this porta potty. I don't know why this porta potty is in New York with Dr. Calico's Evil Eye logo on it, but he follows it, and eventually he ends up with his head stuck between the metal bars of a dog park, or just I don't know if it's Central Park, but just a Manhattan park. And basically, he's helped out by the Good Feathers.
Yeah, I know. I think they even have the exact same colors to their heads.
Possibly, like, I think, like, purple, green, and blue, but they're not parodies. I mean, they would have got sued for this, but they're not parodies. Even though they are, like, sort of Italian-American New York stereotypes, they're not exactly
Ray Liotta,
Robert De Niro, and Joe Pesci, but... they did remind me of the Good Feathers, but they help him dislodge his head. He's asking, like, where is Dr. Calico? Where's the cat? And they think they recognize him, but they don't, even as this big bus with the Bolt, as this big Bolt bus is going by him. Although, when I looked up Bolt bus for images, I remember there was a bus service called the Bolt bus?
No, I did not. Okay.
I took one to DC once and it was super cramped, so I remember that because of that. But there's this bus on with, you know, like a basically a big banner of the TV show behind him, and they still don't recognize him because they're dim. But they do know of a cat. There's like a sly look between them, and turns out this cat is called Mittens, who's basically running a protection racket. He's voiced by Susie Essman, who's apparently best known for Curb Your Enthusiasm, which I've just ended and which I've never seen. But what do you think of her performance?
She's okay.
Okay.
It's fine. It's good. I'm not going to say it's serviceable. It's good. But I guess I'm not going to put any charges to this, but it did kind of have a sort of like Meg energy from Hercules. Yeah. Kind of like the cynical female lead that half the time tolerates the main character's naivete, and then half the time goes against it and has a somewhat of an emotional arc. So there was a familiarity to it that kind of blunted some efficacy for me, but it wasn't intense enough for me to like dislike the character or the performer's performance.
Okay, I only know her from this. I liked her performance pretty well. The fact that she is like so cynical and world-weary, and unlike Meg, there isn't a sex element to it. We can't have dogs and cats hooking up.
That we know of.
Yeah. I love that, and she's not always the nicest person. I love that she's riding this protection racket on all these pigeons, and there's a semi-sinister Italian guitar or music playing, and she threatens to claw one of them to death when she just gives him like a little breadcrumb, although we learn later that she's declawed, so I wonder how that would have turned out. But basically, the pigeons turn Mittens over to Bolt, and Bolt is like very no-nonsense with her, and holds her over the bridge just like the thug earlier, and she sort of plays along with him like eventually, and she sees that he somehow she's able to read, but I won't read into that, pun not intended. But she sees that he has a Hollywood address on his pet tag, and says, "You know what? I'll lead you back to Penny." And she takes this there's like this fake chain restaurant, Waffle World. She takes a U.S. map from there, like saying, "We can get you to there because it is a sort of kids." This sort of kids map of like all like the waffle chains. At what point is she leashed to him? Is that like after, like right when they meet?
I'm trying to think.
It's not a big plot point, but I was trying to remember.
But basically, I believe it is when he decides to go after he sees the map that, like, their leash, okay. I believe.
Oh, yeah, and he had a leash put on him because there was a dog walker that basically picked him up, and he's, like, he was encountering dogs for the first time, you know, like, sniffing the butts, which he's not familiar with. But they're basically leashed together. It's kind of like the cliche of, like, it's like a policeman who, like, handcuffs a criminal to him so he can, like, bring him to jail. But they hop on a U-Haul. There's some product placement there. They hop on a U-Haul truck with a Hollywood label on it, and they hide between the couch cushions and springs. And I don't have a lot of grips for this one, but it's 36 minutes in where this road trip part of it has finally started. And I feel like there's maybe a little too much time with the setup. But a little nicer if there was more time on the road, like crossing the country. But anything else before we hop back to California briefly?
Yeah, I think I also like kind of saw, okay, where are we into the plot now? And I think that like the first bit with like the whole the filming and the panning and that kind of stuff went by fairly fast. I am not a big fan of the dependent character has been misplaced and now it's a road trip back to get to their home because they're all lost. I kind of find that whole situation kind of distressing. Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, it's like half the episodes of Rugrats, which like in 10 minutes, it doesn't necessarily give you as much stress. But like, mm-hmm. you know, there's a bit of that. There's a bit of Homeward Bound, but with the sort of like misunderstanding of like what he even is and that kind of stuff. I wasn't thrilled by like, we'll be getting this further away, but we must get our way back to Hollywood.
There's a brief scene back in L.A. Penny is distraught over the loss of Balt. And the douche agent comes and says, "Great news." And she's like, "Is Balt back?" He said, "No, we are on the Tonight Show." And he even says like something like, "I'm sure Balt would have liked you to do that." And I think her mom gives him a look. So I think, and even he knows he went too far. But anyway, they cross into Ohio on the U-Haul van. Mittens, we learn, is very cynical about human owners. And I don't remember how it comes up, but
isn't this also Jesse from Toy Story 2?
Yeah, and also kind of the tramp from Lady and the Tramp. I think he or was it some other pet? I know I've seen this in a previous Disney film. There was another pet somewhere that was abandoned. Might have been for Oliver or company, but Mittens is cynical about human owners and Jake. Gets Bolt talking about Penny or something like that. She tries to knock him out with a baseball bat, but it just results in another box of styrofoam peanuts pouring on them and them being thrown out of the trunk somehow. It's more of Bolt learning that he doesn't have superpowers because I don't think we actually see blood, but he says, "What's this red stuff coming from my paw?"
Yes, exactly.
I didn't like laugh out loud, but I was amused that he thought like... He basically treats styrofoam peanuts like it's kryptonite. Like it's robbing him of his powers. Mm-hmm. More like red sunlight. But basically, she gons onto this. She tries to subdue him with the peanut. And she says, "That's a weird place to put a piano." And she turns and he gets the better of it. Basically, they're still not getting along. They're still tied together. And he feels hungry for the first time also, which he's not... A little unbelievable. I think dogs, even if they're well, I know for a fact, like dogs, even if they're like fed regularly, they'll let you know if they're hungry or not. They'll stand towards their bowl. I find it a little, I get that he would have been like well fed and like never like wanting anything, but wouldn't he, if he was never hungry, wouldn't he be super fat? Doesn't even know what's going
on. Like, why am I hungry?
Yeah, that's a little convenient. I'm talking it out. But I do like this. Mitten actually, oddly enough, he gets some acting lessons for her because he learns to beg for the first time. Because I think the breed he is, this white Swiss dog or whatever, I think they are supposed to be like fairly small. So he's like, even as an adult, he's able to make these cute faces to get food. Although Mittens does it, for some reason, somebody throws a frying pan at her.
Get that cat out of the way!
It was funny, but they're cat fans also. It's a little surprising that she'd be rejected, whereas he'd do it, even if she is like an alley cat. But basically, we're in this trailer park in Ohio where they're bumming food from these people, like, having their hot dogs and burgers out and barbecuing outside. But one of the trailers has a hamster and a ball in it called Rhino. And did you pick up on some of the channels he was flipping through?
You know what? I there was audio off screen, and I think at the moment I did, but I can't remember what they were now.
Okay, I didn't recognize all of them, but there's a Gilligan's Island one. There's a clip of Rosie O'Donnell talking about serotonin. I think it would have been from The View or something like that. And I wouldn't have known this because I had the subtitles on, but apparently there was a line from the A-Team on it because Mr. T
is quoted.
Yeah, it was the Baracus way or whatever. But he sees pulled out the window and he recognizes him and he goes over in his hamster ball and basically fanboys over Bolt, and he buys into the fantasy as much as Bolt does at this point. And before I get into more, what do you think of Rhino?
You know, we have it's not as bad as like Zini the Incel Lemur or anything like that. honestly, I have nothing against him. I think that like he wasn't annoying, but he was. I know I've said this before that like at some point the comedic characters in these films have just became just a lot more signposted. Mm-hmm. And so, like, okay, you know, that's his character. He had a couple of laughs for me throughout the film.
Mm-hmm.
But he was okay. He was okay. Didn't love him, but I didn't dislike him either.
Okay, I like them for the most part. He didn't make me laugh a lot, but I do like the vocal performance. Apparently, it was done by one of the animators. It's not by like a professional actor, but plus there's also something funny about, I don't know, something innately funny about a hamster, somebody with these tiny hands, like gesticulating wildly. And also, I didn't notice this till the second time viewing, but he actually has. He has a black spot on his left side, which kind of like Bolt's logo, but his is almost like a cloud. So it's almost like marking him as like an immediate sidekick to Bolt.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't pick up on that either.
Yeah. He has like several good exchanges with Bolt where basically he like talking about the jaws of death, but he's like very enthusiastic about it. He's like been waiting for this adventure to come his way. But they try to hitch a ride on this very long freight train. I will say, you know, like when there's like a timer and like you're in a film and you're like looking at the clock and it turns out to be the period of time the timer goes on is longer than the clock. I kind of felt that with this train. I feel like the time like they took to hop onto it, like with the mittens resisting and everything, but I think they would have missed it, but that's a minor quibble. But they end up on like the ladder, like some sort of creaky ladder on the like, caboose or like the end car of the train. And I mean, Rhino like survives okay because he has this ball that he's able to like, manipulate very well. But Bolt is like holding onto this ladder and it eventually hits some sort of, I don't know like what the signposts and like trains mean or what it is, but there's some sort of obstacle that the ladder hits and they're basically thrown off the road again. It's like when they're thrown off the road again and Bolt is injured and Mittens ends up being on a tree, and this is where she like really lays in the Bolt, trying to convince him that his world is fake and that he was on TV. Like Rhino says something about like the magic box that humans watch, and that's where she clocks that he's a TV star. And
and then he says, "You are a sad, strange little cat. You have my pity."
Yeah. And then he does the bolt equivalent of like flashing the laser at him, which is the super bark, but surprise, surprise, it doesn't work. Rhino is off getting, I think he goes off to get a ladder in his ball, but they're picked up by the county animal patrol. And actually, we go back to LA briefly. Penny, who has the same name as her protagonist, is printing wanted posters for Bolt with a very authentic looking old copy machine. But the agent comes in, he says, "I have great news." And he brings in the dog cart with the animal expert. He says, "I have Bolt." But it takes her, and Bolt like goes into her arms, the music swells, but then the animal handler clicks something, and basically it turns out this is a doppelganger of the real Bolt. And I think his logo might even be different, but I have to check again. But
I think you and I both saw this scene coming.
Yeah, he tries to gaslight Penny, and it doesn't work at all. He tells some weird story about riding a baseball glove to school every day, which I don't know if that's supposed to be funny or if it's supposed to say that he has experience with gaslighting and that's why he does it. But the network exec comes in. She could say that we could replace you or could replace Bolt. He says basically to have the show go on for people to keep their jobs, they're going to have you let Bolt go. And under pressure, she stops the copy machine. And meanwhile, in the animal control van, Mittens talks about how they're being taken to a place where people adopt pets. And she says something about how they adopt cuter looking pets than her. So I think from other, it sounds like she's had like several owners and been like ignored in favor of cuter cats before. She has here and there, she has some history of neglect and abuse that informs her cynicism. But Rhino finally catches up with them, and again, taking aside the impossibility of hamsters and dogs and cats moving at the speed that they do in this film, I do like him escaping the ball, and like the mad laugh that he has. But he frees Bolt from one of the containers, and Bolt has like been trying to bust out with his quote unquote super strength even as he's wearing himself out. It's here where he finally starts to realize. Well,
he realizes that when Rhino says, "I freed you," he's like, "You freed me? Then I don't have super strength." And that's like the big moment that like shatters his world forever.
Yeah. But I do really like, even though he is like naive, he thinks, I do like how impassioned like Rhino's speech is. It seemed like there's something about, as stupid as the show is, there's something about it that gives people hope. It kind of reminds me of like superhero fandom or fans of like Superman in general, or just characters in general. Like people feel empowered by, or the power of fiction to make people feel braver or stronger. So he basically said, Bolt like tries to like tell him, I didn't do all those things. Rhino basically gives him a pep talk that gets him to the animal control office. Am I missing anything or anything else before we get there?
Just that, like, I feel that, like, there was a lot of scenes of the animal characters falling off of high-speed vehicles, not only surviving, but also catching up to each other. Mm-hmm. And when Rhino caught up to Bolt, freed Bolt, the car drives off. Like, yes, now let's go get Mittens, and they find Mittens. I was like, that's a couple of coincidences too many for me at this point.
Yeah.
The frequency of them was, no pun intended, but kind of beginning to really claw at my – believability of this Disney film for children. But no.
As my sister used to say mistakenly, the suspension is killing you.
Exactly. That's a good line.
Yeah. Hopefully she won't listen to this, but I tease her about that every now and then. But anyway, somehow they reach the animal shelter. Rhino distracts the guard on duty by going into the dog kennel and his ball. And I do kind of like the dogs just like merely fixating on the ball. It's like the seagulls in Finding Nemo, like the mine. But Bolt releases Mittens from one of the kennels, who doesn't believe that he came back for her, and he finally admits he's starting to see reality, and she starts to sympathize him. He's basically saying, like, wow, you had a really rough day. But they break out. Rhino escapes in his ball by, like, using the saliva, like, to give it extra torsion or something like that. The guard on duty goes after them, and they're nearly cornered by the animal control people there, but basically
that was a funny shot though, like when the ball is in the dog's mouth, like the image of that was pretty amusing.
Yeah, but this is the best Rube Goldberg ass thing in the film. Basically, I think one of the guards, he slips on the saliva, it causes Bolt to bark. Basically, Brian thinks it's a super bark, but it's like this gas canister that goes flying, and they get past the guard, and somehow this canister crashes into the truck, causing it to explode.
It was like the signs lamppost. It knocks it in one hit, which directly falls on top of the truck, which is carrying like gas, and it explodes, which easily killed somebody. And it's like nobody here deserves to walk away free.
No. I mean, they are, like, unjustly in an animal shelter, but these people's lives are kind of ruined. I couldn't help feeling, like, bad for, like, all this happening.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, okay, maybe not the big animal control wings, because the third one, the little woman, she pepper sprayed him at one point, and we don't know if that's because he harassed her or stuck up on her or whatever, so maybe he has it coming, but it's... It kind of reminds me of, like, the people who, like, in, like, superhero films or, like, superhero fights, the people whose cars are ruined by, like, fights between superheroes and villains and destruction, like, random destruction of property for no reason. But anyway, they escape, Ray. They jump onto a moving house. I will say this is another convenient thing. How do they know all these vehicles are westbound?
That's a good question, Christian.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's a kid's film. I know it's like stories in general rely on coincidence, but they are pretty lucky. Never mind, like the vehicles like go that fast. And by the way, there's some more thawing between Mittens and Bald. Basically, she reveals like cats are envious of dogs, and basically teaches him like dog stuff, you know, drinking from toilets and like eating off the floor, and best of all, like having your head out the window, like having your mouth hang open. And also in this mobile home, we should say, it's not a mobile home, but it's literally like a house on a truck. Is there a word for that?
I think it's a mobile home. It's not a trailer. It's a mobile home for sure.
Yeah. But it is like literally a house on like the back of a truck rather than like an RV. But Rhino like ends up like yelling through the vents, which is sort of seeds the climax, which I hadn't realized till rewatching the film earlier today. But there's a montage of the animals like hopping from vehicle to vehicle cross country, and Bolt learning to behave like a dog, and as the song called "Barking at the Moon" plays, which is nice. I think there's a Homeward Bound montage with them like walking on the bridge and the moonlight. Although, I guess it could also be a Lion King reference. You know, Simba ages.
Yeah. The Homeward Bound feels closer.
Yeah, I think it was Homeward Bound, but people not familiar could see a Lion King thing. But I think it's Homeward Bound, even though I don't know if I've seen that film in full. I think it's
this made me want to rewatch Homeward Bound, honestly.
Same. Well, this is pulling not only from Toy Story and the Truman Show, but also Homeward Bound. and actually, when they're in Vegas, there's a very Ocean's 11-like shot when they're running the Bellagio. After they've done some dumpster diving. Anyway, but... So things seem to be going peachy, but it's the beginning of the end of the second act, the third act, so something has to go wrong, so... Mittens does what seems to be what she thinks is a nice thing. She sees these boxes that basically fit her Bolt and Rhino very well. Like, they're pushing to their size, and she, like, has the soft mat put in for Bolt. But basically, she thinks that he's, like, finally, like, everything about... But she thinks that he's, like, finally, like, getting in touch with reality, and that... But she's, in her own cynical way, she thinks that everything about Bolt's life is fake, including Penny. But mm-hmm. Bolt says he still wants to go back to her, so she drags him literally in front of a sign for the show and says, "Does this look real? Does this look real?" And Mitten says that Penny's a fake. And she says, we get more insight into her and Bannerman. She says, like, they pretend that you love you, and then they abandon you and leave you wondering what you did wrong. And she basically tells Bolt to fuck off, but Bolt, to his credit, just says, take care of yourself. Although I do wonder, why does Mittens let Bolt leave without Rhino? Or why does Bolt leave without Rhino? When he goes off to L.A. alone? It's a minor thing, but...
She must have forgotten that he was there. He's, like, sleeping.
Yeah. He subjected himself to a meat lover's pizza. So, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But she lies as, oh, he went off alone. And he gives another, like, I mean, misguided, but really, like, great motivational speech about how I've seen it, like, a bunch of times on TV. Basically, I've seen it a bunch of times on TV. Like, the hero, like, going it alone, and he's inspired to follow him. And she decides to follow him also. She's starting to maybe regret it. Any thoughts about, like, the sort of inevitable fallout scene before we go back to Hollywood?
And inevitable it was. Well, I mean, I liked the complication of, like, okay, my life is a lie, but at least Penny still loves me. Because that is, you know, because that love is real, mm-hmm. he feels that. And I understand, you know, I feel like it's an honest conflict. I don't know, like kind of like the cynicism I mentioned in referencing Meg from Hercules. Mm-hmm. It felt a little familiar, but it worked well for the story that they were kind of telling. Mm-hmm. And this kind of movie, you can kind of sense that, like, there would be sort of like a end of second act kind of like low period. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I wasn't, like, you know, moved to the point of suspense. Okay. So, what, anything else from you?
No, I'm just worried I'm talking too much, going over the minutia of the synopsis, or to talk. But anyway, Bolt eventually arrives in Hollywood. He hitches. I do like the montage. I like the song that they're playing, and they're showing the waffle map as they go on, like when they're going, like, state to state, and, like, as they're going through the landscapes. And it's here that. It didn't struck me the first time, but if you look at, like, some of the background there, it looks painted rather than computer animated, and it's not realistic, but I think it's a nice touch. I like that it hasn't gone fully digital and hasn't, like, gone for total photorealism at this point.
Right.
So 2D animation isn't quite dead yet at Disney, but unfortunately that won't last very long. Anyway... Back in Hollywood, Bolt, he's there. He runs into some Hollywood pigeons who do recognize him, and they pitch him this wonderful idea, which is aliens. And he says, I don't know if he's humoring them or not, or if he thinks it's generally a good idea. He says, listen, I'll take up your idea, but if you take me to the studio. So he's brought there. He's brought to Sovereign Studios, which I think is supposed to, and there's a water tower with Penny and Bolt, so... I think Paramount or Warner Brothers have a similar studios like that, Burbank. But I will say, this is a video on YouTube pointing out that there is an extent of this film biting the hand that feeds them when it comes to, like, I don't know if the directors were targeting Disney specifically, but I think there is intentional jab at the way the film business goes, and, like, the higher ups and the people involved there. But what do you think about that?
I mean, I've been to Hollywood before. I've walked up to the Hollywood sign. I've been near the WB Tower. in LA. So I'm not sure, but I wasn't necessarily thinking about those two references because those are such iconic landmarks in America. I'm not really cognizant of any sort of like in-house jabbing. I will agree though that the adults in this film and the people kind of like, you know, working in show business are like their cynicism is kind of like the explanation as to why they're stupid. Mm-hmm. They always say, like I was trying to say before my mic was muted, that the guy who tried to replace, like, you know, you and I were both probably seeing the scene of the bolt replacement coming a mile away. Mm-hmm. But I feel that, like, you know, like he could have told her, okay, listen, like, you know, like the whole, like, you know, we found Bolt, and like feigning that they've actually found the real Bolt. Like, I just told her, like, listen, little girl, like, you know, it's a show. We got to get a replacement dog. And I feel that, like, just kind of going through the motions of like bringing her hopes up is a cartoonish level of cruelty that kind of belies, or not belies, but kind of like, you know, goes against the commentary that the cynicism is meant to kind of reflect on this, on the show business. Mm. So it kind of runs into itself. I don't know how biting it is really, because I feel that, like, these are jokes that like Animaniacs has done 1,000 times before. Okay. But it is definitely there, and it is definitely kind of like unending.
Yeah. I was going to say, there aren't cartoonishly evil people in Hollywood. That's totally unrealistic. Sorry, that's a bad joke.
No, it's all good. Yeah, it's all fine.
But the same video, I think it was called like something like Bolt is a Critique of Disney. I didn't agree with every point in it, but they did point out that the way Penny is presented, the fact that Bolt's name is on the trailer and that like his needs are like taken care of like before his, so it's almost like in a weird way she actually is kind of already a captive of the system. Like she really is in a sort of hostage situation that Bolt ends up inadvertently rescuing her from, and by extension her mom. But I don't know. He could have been reading into it. By the way, Bolt returns to his trailer. He reunites with Mr. Carrot, and the scene would be really emotional, except for something I'll bring up in a second. But they're in the sound stage or whatever, and he sees Penny, like, seemingly recognizing Bolt. He says, Bolt, you came back, and he runs towards her. He's kind of obscured in shadow, but the fake Bolt runs into her arms, and it turns out this is rehearsing for a scene. Bolt feels he's really been abandoned, but how does Penny not see this other identical Swiss dog from the corner of her eye only a few feet away?
I was expecting that she would.
Yeah.
I was also seeing it coming that, like, she's obviously hugging the wrong dog. That kind of made me think that I was kind of wondering, and I have no intention to, like, you know, backwards write this movie, but, like, if they actually cut the scenes of Penny, like, trying to find Bolt and with the flyers and then being given the fake dog, if those actually cut out, this would actually play a little bit harsher.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what if Mittens was right? I mean, we can still have the scene where she misses the real Bolt afterwards, but, like, I feel that, like, they tipped their hand way too early. Like, you know for a fact that, like, not only can you see it coming that, like, it's she's addressing the fake dog, but also that, like, you know that she's really not as cynical as Mittens described her to be. So the fact that, like, if they had cut that earlier scene out, I think dramatically would have been a lot more effective.
Yeah, you're right. It only really exists to make you hate the agent and the network even more. Thinking about it, but maybe to set up the fake Bolt also, because he is like accompanied by his handler in the scene we're getting to soon. But that is a good point. But anyway, Mittens actually does follow Bolt into this soundstage. After, like, rehearsing the scene, Bolt goes off distraught, and Mittens is actually in the rafters, and she sees Penny with her mother, like, basically lamenting that the real Bolt isn't there. So she finally sees that this aspect of this world she thought was so fake, this is the one real thing about Bolt's life that anchors him. But I think it's in a different soundstage. Penny is playing out the scene where she's like tied to this rope. I don't know if gantry is the right word, but she's tied to this rope dangling over this what's supposed to be this very far fall, but there's clearly a mattress beneath. they're in this torchlit lair. Dr. Calico says maybe having your daughter kidnapped will loosen your tongue to her on-screen dad. Bolt bursts in to rescue him. Dr. Calico said, I do like the design of his henchmen, like the sort of motorcycle helmets they have on, the sort of claws that they have with the lightning, but...
They look like Tom from Toonami. Like, with the helmets and such.
What show is that from?
Toonami was a cartoon block, Cartoon Network, where they mainly showed anime.
I know they showed Justice League Unlimited at one point, but...
It was the interstitial... Like Cartoon Network's like Toonami kind of like block. It was the cartoons were kind of they had they had the wraparounds where they were introduced, and you'd have like the Tom like space robot that was voiced by Steve Bloom eventually. But that was he was like the Toonami mascot, and he had the kind of this big space head, and he like going, no, here's a new episode of Justice Unlimited. No, here's a new episode of Dragon Ball GT or whatever. And they still do it to this day on Saturdays. But like looking at the Kingsman now, it's like either that or like Halo.
I guess maybe Halo. They did. There's a very pure reference. They reminded me of Aether Foundation henchmen from Pokemon Sun and Moon, but that came out 10 years after this. Some of them have a similar sort of motorcycle visor. But yeah, I think the Halo is probably more accurate, and just making henchmen faceless in general, so you don't care when they get murdered horribly.
We sure don't.
Yeah, but basically the replacement Bolt freaks out like I put my notes Bolt from the set. He knocks it. Okay, this would never happen. I'm sure pyrotechnics people are much more professional about this, but he knocks over a bunch of tiki torches that causes this huge fire on the soundstage. That like basically engulfs the whole thing. Meanwhile, as this chaos is happening, Bolt and Mittens reunite, and Mittens tells Bolt to return to Penny. And you mentioned this before, how Bolt is, and they could have made more of this, like his super sense, just his natural canine super senses, but he smells / hears / detects Penny in danger. Or just Penny in general.
I mean, you cut to the soundstage, and the place is engulfed in flames, and Penny is completely abandoned, left tied up while the fire is spreading. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, what is this, Nickelodeon Studios? Like the level of like abandonment for children. Like I was kind of like appalled by that, even in a fake movie set.
I also noticed like when the fire was happening, there's actually somebody who ran in front of it and said, oh no, we have a real fire, if you couldn't see that. So wow, this the studio.
It's also awful. I mean like it's also contrived that like they would have like no fire extinguishers or like contingencies for that. Let's say that like the unlikeliness of the way that the fire started goes down. The idea that somebody's not at the ready with a fire extinguisher is a little hard to swallow.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there even sprinklers? Wouldn't sound stages have sprinklers?
Yeah, that's it too.
Oh man. But anyway, Rhino comes back. I do love that he like tries to like tackle like this guy in the henchman one and is like screaming at him in his little hamster ball. But the guy just holds up his, oh look how cute you are. Although apparently hamsters are incredibly aggressive and are prone to cannibalism if you keep too many of them.
Dear.
So, John F. Kennedy. I heard this story in this history book. John F. Kennedy Jr. had this. Was given this hamster that like, and the author said like the personal tragedies when the hamster family were worse than the tragedies that the Kennedy family had.
And that writer was fired.
No, it's a seriously great book. I'll tell you about it later. But no. Like hamsters are genuinely, basically, it was like this book about 50 questions in history. I know I'm in a tangent, but one was, how did people end up adopting hamsters given they're so aggressive and unfriendly towards each other? But like they eat their own offspring and like fight and kill each other and stuff like that. Anyway, Rhino escapes and basically there's this crumbling structure that like everybody's leaving the building except for Penny, although she is tied up earlier and the person instructs her how to get out. So she gets out and she lands on, I guess, a bit of matting, but she's still trapped there. There's this falling structure that Rhino manages to hold up with his plastic ball. Although it starts to crack and Mittens extracts him from the ball. Bolt goes, dives under just as it crushes the ball and traps them inside. And
the line, it's a good day to die, was honestly pretty funny.
Yeah, he would have made a great Klingon. I can see him rolling around like on this really tiny batleth. anyway, they reunite in the fire as everything's like burning pieces, obviously burning, and Penny begins to suffocate from the fumes. And there's a moment where he sort of like leads her around like on the leash after she says zoom zoom, which is what she says in the show when he's like going at super speed like to drag her on the scooter. But he gets her towards this vent and she's sort of losing hope. And there is this is a Disney film, so obviously it's happening, but there is a bit where you think that maybe they're not going to make it, and that this vent, yeah, which appears to be a little too small for Penny to go through. But she's like sort of like losing strength. Bolt is sort of beginning to suffocate also. He sees the vent, he barks through it, and the bark echoes through the sound system, and that allows the firemen, there are people to hear them, and basically say, hey, somebody's still in there. They end up, as it fades to black, they rescue Penny and Bolt from the burning building. So I do like this, that like Bolt finally actually is able to be a real hero in a roundabout way.
Yeah, I caught that too. I thought that was nice.
Yeah.
She's the ambulance. The mother jumps into it because, of course, adults act like adults until the agent reappears.
And he says, this is great. We can spin this. You can get your executive newspaper. You get in the headlines. And she either kicks or pushes him out the ambulance and breaks his phone and everything. And which is a long time coming.
We quit. And he's like, let's put a pin.
And then slams the door. Although I do, this is another contrivance, but even though Penny's fine, they wouldn't bring a pet into the hospital. Wouldn't there be some sort of like contamination or risk of diseases for them brought in?
I mean, that's a detail that I'm not expecting this kind of movie to relay exactly, because so many other details have been like logic and reason have been I can see that we're not needed here. So it's one of those things where it's like, you're probably right, but what are you going to do?
Fair enough. But anyway, Agent is fired, Penny's mother says we quit, and there's much rejoicing. And I do like this. There's another fake out scene. We go to the hospital, we see like the heart monitor, the IV, and the doc, like Penny, quote unquote, Penny's face is bandaged, and the two doctors said, I'm afraid your face was more damaged than we expected. And they unwrap it, and it's a new Penny. It's a younger looking actress with, I think, more freckles and green eyes, and her voice is younger, and she says, oh, at least Dr. Calico won't recognize me, but it turns out he's one of the doctors with the mask on. That's a very solid fake out. What's that?
That was a perfectly solid fake out.
Yeah. And it's something TV shows would do, like pretending an actor, yes, getting around to recast by saying, oh, this person had an accident, so has a new face. But Dr. Calico's going to inject her with this poisonous-looking liquid, but then it's destroyed by eye lasers from Bolt. Bolt bursts back in. I think it's fake. I'm pretty sure. It's almost certainly a fake Bolt at this point. Because actually, another thing we mentioned is that ever since Rhino busted him out, the logo makeup onto his side has been fading, and it's a very faint gray by the time he's in Hollywood.
Mm.
whereas this bolt has the logo on again. But they basically burst through the wall. They seem to fall, but they're beamed up by aliens. And to this point that Rhino turns off the screen and says, that is totally unrealistic.
not like my life.
Yeah. The stupid show has finally jumped the shark.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, just random question. I don't know if this is the case with your viewing experience with it, but was there a moment in The Flash that did that for you, that where it jumped the shark, or is it something else, or did its decline in quality just sour you on it?
I mean, like, season 3 definitely was lazier than season 2, and then season 4 was, like, mostly garbage except for, like, one episode. I think the moment of no return was that like, if somebody had somebody at gunpoint and the Flash like wasn't fast enough to like stop them from pulling the trigger. I saw that and I was like, well, I'm never watching this show again. It was like that's just like a betrayal of like the you know, the essence of the character. So I guess I'll say that.
Okay, I've not seen all the show, but I was just thinking about this show and its parallel and the fact that it's a super. Dog with super speed made me think of the Flash show immediately. But basically, Penny and her mom have adopted Bolt for real. He no longer has a logo there, along with Mittens and Rhino. And they're this nice house in the country somewhere where the pigeons don't recognize Bolt. The last shot of the film before the credits is an Aussie that Penny takes of all the pets in the same shot, and it's just like the one she took of Bolt that were all throughout our trailer, so that was nice. And we actually end with animated credits with a song sung by Miley Cyrus, who voiced Penny, if we didn't mention that, and John Travolta. Any thoughts about the song?
Really. I think the song was decent. The idea of the two leads singing the song was clearly a reference to Infernal Affairs, the Korean film from which Martin Scorsese's The Departed is based off of. So I appreciate the cinema literacy. you know, it's funny because the art style is very distinct, but it doesn't resemble – it's how The Incredibles was, right, where The Incredibles had sort of 2D credits that I think – did kind of recall being 3D, but like this design, well, nice, doesn't exactly look like how the characters are designed when they are rendered in 3D. And nonetheless, that's not a criticism. That's just sort of an observation. It was cute. It was nice. It was nice to see, like, you know, like no, seriously, this really is a happy ending for these characters.
I will say this is a minor thing. Some of the thing I don't think they really decided on Penny's age. I think at one point they mentioned she's 13 and I think Miley Cyrus is around our age, so I think she would have been like around 18 or 19 when this came out, and her voice is kind of lower than like a young girl. So
I didn't catch that. Her voice is like pretty deep for a little kid.
Yeah, but some of the things she was doing in like the closing montage, like, you know, trick or treating or like running around, they seemed like some younger, slightly younger kids would do. Although I guess you could say her childhood was sort of stolen by the studio, she's sort of making up for that lost time, I guess, but. That's
I thought about this because when I was watching the movie and they said 5 years later and they cut to, like, you know, previously on 24, I was like, okay, so to my mind, I was like, okay, let's say that she was like 5 when she first adopted Bolt, and then, like, you know, now she's 10. Wikipedia, you know, which is always right and never wrong, says that she was 7 when she adopted Bolt, which would put her as 12, which actually would explain her voice just a little bit more. They don't say it in the film, so who knows?
Yeah, I read her as 12 or 13. I think somebody, like, one of the costumes person says something about 13, and the fact that she was like reading a teen magazine in the opening scene provided a lower voice. But plus the fact that the replacement actress is clearly younger in the alien scene. But anything else before we go over the film overall?
Let's go over the film overall.
Okay, well, what are you thinking for seeing this for the very first time? Probably the only time, I'm guessing.
Well, look. Listen to me. you know, this is a perfectly serviceable movie for kids. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, that, like, the best of the films that you and I have discussed on Part of Your World i.e. the Disney Renaissance films, up to and including Tarzan, honestly. Mm-hmm. And then we graded Tarzan fairly highly. I think have a much larger all-ages appeal. And I know that, like, people kind of, like, can ghettoize the all-ages label, but I do feel that, like, movies that are all-ages appeal to adults and kids. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, from depending on the parent, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, or, in my opinion, like Incredibles, or, like, movies like Aladdin, or, I mean, Hunchback of Notre Dame is a bit of a different conversation, but, like, you know, mm-hmm. movies like that, or The Lion King. And I think this is a kid's movie. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that, but I think that, like, I don't – if it were aiming to be a little bit more higher quality than just one made for a certain age demographic, I think it failed because, like, nothing in this film at the end of the day really stands out. Because I got to think about, like, what exactly is the true, like, emotional story here? A dog is kind of raised under one understanding until he's not. And then he must go home to his owner who loves him. I kind of feel that's not all that special, to be honest. Like, I feel that's not kind of not a big deal. Whereas, you know, we make the obvious comparisons to Toy Story. Toy Story is like, the conceit is like, okay, toys, right? Toys actually exist. They know they're toys, but they exist. But what if a toy that did exist didn't know he was a toy? That takes the concept and kind of pushes it further. Mm-hmm. Here, it's kind of missing that sort of like two sides of a coin angle.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's left is the writing, which at times is amusing, but not ever really funny. Like, there's nothing really great about the writing, I don't think. The animation is good. I think the animation with the pigeons was at the animation at its best, with like the kind of way the pigeons' heads would twitch and such.
Oh yeah.
I think that's to be commended upon. The voice acting is fine. It's good. But I don't think the material pushes it to where it's like, you know, mesmerizing. There are a lot of familiar story beats which kind of like reinforce the mediocrity of the film. I think that the idea of a dog kind of being part of a television show but not realizing that it's a television show is interesting. I think the script isn't there to push the interest as far as it could. And I think the kind of cliches of the road trip and getting lost and kind of, and like, you know, the second act, misunderstanding, whatever, kind of blunt its potential a bit. Mm-hmm. And because when I hit those cliches, I wasn't really happy that they were in the film. I don't think this is a bad film. Like, nothing repelled me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of at the, like, which one did I like more? This one or Dinosaurs? Or Dinosaur? I don't intend it to be, like, you know, damn it, faint praise or whatever. But, like, I think it's a good kids film. But, like, for me personally, it didn't do a lot for me, but I wasn't asking it to do a lot for me either. So it's, you know, it's okay. It's all right for what it is.
Okay. I think I like it more than you did, but I did go in kind of with low expectations. I didn't remember enjoying it the first time and kind of talking over. I think I can kind of see why this is a sort of forgotten Disney film. Cause they're just starting to do 3D ones and there's still a lot of similarity, some stylistic similarities to Pixar films, and the idea behind it is sort of similar to Toy Story and a bit of Truman Show here and there, and other things we reference, like Homeward Bound. So it's not entirely original, but it is heartfelt. It's not ever that annoying. There was one reference I think kids wouldn't get, and I had to look up, but at one point Mittens called Bolt Cujo, which is apparently a reference to a Stephen King book and movie about a rabid St. Bernard. I didn't know about that. But yeah, there isn't any. I was thinking, like, before recording about that, want to reference the potential hookers in Aladdin. There's nothing like that here, not even in Las Vegas.
That's right. Nothing for adults to enjoy.
I mean, there's good performances. I do like Rhino a fair bit. I think nice to have a non-annoying, like, but genuinely useful sidekick. Although it is like parts of it that are actually a little too similar to the opening at the beginning, where this is unbelievable. Like, things that would be at home.
I just heard you saying, like, there's stuff that happens, like the animal shelter explosion feels like it would belong in the show that they faked.
Yeah. And if there was something that, like, kudos into the fact that this is like seen from Rhino's point of view or something like that, or that it was from Bolt's point of view, that would be fine. But yeah, I enjoyed it and I didn't mind like having to rewatch it. I wouldn't mind watching it again, but it's the best so far of the three digitally animated Disney films I've covered so far. It's the best of the three, but they're still not quite there yet. Or they're not. They're still. Well, but the next two films I think are better. 2D or 3D, but
And kind of like Dinosaur, you know, I don't see anybody even talk about this movie at all. So which I think does that in some way or another say something.
Yeah, it was critically well received and it did well financially overall. It wasn't one of the highest grossing films at the time, but I don't think. I mean, Twilight and Quantum of Solace were fairly successful, but it's still made over $300 million against a budget about half of that much. And it's admittedly a low bar. I think of Disney's pet protagonist films, I think this might be my favorite, although admittedly they're not really my bag anyway. Like, I'm not that crazy about Lady and the Tramp, even taking out the racist Siamese cats in there. I like 101 Dalmatians okay. I kind of like Oliver and Company, but I hate Aristocats. This is better than most of those, but that's not really saying much.
Oh yeah, you said pets, so I guess we can't count Robin Hood.
No, or I'm not counting the Rescuers or Grand Mouse Detective, because the mice are more independent there. Right. But in terms of like dog and cat narratives, this is one of the better ones, I think. Anything else before we score it out of 5?
Not for me, man.
Okay, Donovan, what do you give Bolt out of 5?
Honestly, by the skin of its teeth, I'm going to give it a 3 because I do think it's more memorable. It has a better hook than Dinosaur. And I didn't hate Dinosaur, but Dinosaur honestly was unmemorable. I think this is close to that, but I do think this has a little bit more going for it. But it's pretty close for me in terms of like what I take away from it. Not bad, but nothing I would really revisit again, to be honest.
Okay, I actually was thinking of giving it a 4 going in, but like talking it out and like some of the contrivances and little things did mount up to, and like bring it down a little bit. So I'm giving it a 3. I do like it. Of the digi-animated one so far, this is the one I'd be most likely to revisit, but I know there's better to come. And this was a directorial debut, and perhaps it shows in places like things like the opening scene and how real it is compared to what follows.
I did it! I'm back! Whew. That styrofoam is wicked stuff.
Fully awesome! There's no truck that I know that can keep him bolted in Rhino.
Rhino? What are you doing here?
Oh, nothing. I was enjoying an evening stroll and thought I'd just pop the hatch on that containment unit.
you opened the door?
Yes, I did. Yoink.
Well, that's great, Rhino. Yeah, that's really good.
All right, let's go get the prisoner back.
I can't do it.
What? What did you say?
I can't.
What? Who are you?
Rhino, you just don't
know. You are Bolt!
But I'm not.
Who single-handedly destroyed the Green-Eyed Man's undersea labs?
Me,
and who foiled his plan to infiltrate the Olympics with gymnastics cyborgs? Who, Bolt? Who? Oh!
Me, but none of them.
You! You can, Bolt. Because all over this planet, there are animals who feel like they can't. Like a little hamster who once spent his days in an RV park, dreaming of the day when he, too, would save a little girl from danger and be told, "You did it. You did it, Rhino. You saved the day." They need a hero, Bolt. Someone who, no matter what the odds, will do what's right. They need a hero to tell them that sometimes the impossible can become possible if you're awesome!
Well, you're right about one thing, Rhino. Mittens does need a hero. I guess I'll have to do.
Such modesty! Now, who's going to save that cat?
Me.
Who? Tell me who!
Me.
I'll get my ball.
Guess that's it for this one. Before you go, promote your wares, sir.
Would you like some watches? I do a podcast called...
You could have said sundials.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking in my head. I like, hey, you want a sundial? I do a podcast with Harrison Chute, who was on the dinosaur episode called Questions We Don't Have Answers. It's a rather saucy podcast where we talk about sort of an inner space between like media and politics. Sometimes we just talk about media, sometimes we just talk about politics, but there is sort of a connection between the two. Mm-hmm. I have been writing for the Batman universe for over a decade. I reviewed the monthly Nightwing comic. But I do paid work for DC Comics insofar as I work for their website. Mm-hmm. I have content put in on DC Comics or DC.com where you can go and see my work there.
Mm-hmm. Also, if you're following X-Men 97, you'll want to listen to the episode you did on X-Men recently.
Well, I mean, like I was always going to watch X-Men 97, but like I wasn't really powering the episode. In the forefront of my mind, but that show is so good. Just yes. Watch that. It's on Disney.
Especially last night's episode. Oh my god.
Yeah. Oh, I can't stop thinking about it. That's episode 5. Okay, oh, that show is amazing. It's so good.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to take this off a bit, but two things. A, do you think either of them survived?
I think Magneto has a far better chance than Gambit does.
Yeah. I'm thinking so also. I think he... I don't know if he's as famous as this, but I think kind of like the Joker where he like has a history of coming back from the dead. I'm sure Magneto's like that also. And
I mean, I feel that it's kind of like Mortal Kombat, like everyone dies and comes back eventually.
Well, X-Men also, and I think the recent run in comics, when they're on Krakoa, they even had this thing where they would bring characters back from the dead.
They sure did.
Do you think, who do you think sent the Sentinel there?
I have no idea. I really wonder if they're going to be some sort of like, you know, time fix it, if they're going to go for it. I know that like they're buying up with some other storylines, like mm-hmm. Morrison's storyline when Jenna Show was attacked, and like, you know, mm-hmm. there could be some E for Extinction, Mutant Massacre stuff. I don't know. But like, I wonder if they're going to move forward or if they're going to kind of like retcon it with Cable. But I don't know. Oh. Either way, it's good.
Okay. I was thinking maybe Cassandra Nova, because she's appearing in that film, so maybe this is sort of introducing a new audience to the character, because I don't think she's been in any extra comics media up until now, or like, at least not in the TV shows, and I know she's in the upcoming film, but maybe it goes back to Guy Rick, because going back to the original show, in the very first episode, he's their longest-running enemy, even though they say they have a longer history of Magneto, he's their longest running enemy. And I think somebody pointed out the last three episodes in the series are based on something he said in the first episode.
Yeah, we'll see.
So, yeah, but I don't dislike the character like a lot of fans, but I do think Gambit should stay dead. I think that was a really great way for him to go on multiple levels.
I saw on Twitter recently, and I knew this already, but like, you know, in the comics currently, he and Rogue are happily married, so like it would definitely be a difference. God, that episode was so good, man. This show is so fucking good. This show clears so much other Marvel media. Like, it's to me, it's like the best X-Men thing ever. You know, like better than all the movies, better than all the shows, to be completely honest. Like it clears it rather, you know, it rather easily.
Mm-hmm. It's a minor thing, and this shouldn't surprise me, but they weren't afraid of showing gay couples on Genosha either.
No, because the showrunner who was fired, Bo DeMeo, is gay. So like he was one of the guys in that gay couple.
Oh, really? Yeah. Like they showed an animated version of him on screen.
Yeah. He was like the black guy with, I don't know if he had glasses or not, but like But like he confirmed on Twitter, yeah, that's me. And like, and he's, I mean, like, I know, I'm sure a lot of this he said was his chief pitch to making this show, and a lot of it's based off. He took inspiration from like, you know, the Pulse nightclub shooting.
Oh, okay.
So there's a lot of like, there was a lot of real personal emotion going into doing stuff like this, which is why it's so effective, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I have. I did know the Dinesh was trying to have read the Morrison arc, but that is an interesting connection. I know like X-Men is very queer in general, but I'm glad they're actually acknowledging that. But anyway, that's a tangent and a half.
Watch X-Men 97.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to cover it through this show, but some maybe for Earth 2 on that we can do something.
Others tease.
Bring Will in.
Dan about it. We'll talk to him next.
Yes. I do wonder if Dan would actually enjoy it, because there are a lot of the things he didn't like about it, I think, are absent from the show. Like, Gambit's, like, toned down.
I don't fucking trust him. He was such a about the Lonnie show. And he knows I said that, so we have that, like, sort of, like, tete-a-tete going.
Okay, so that's it for this one. Next time, we're covering the penultimate traditionally animated Disney film, at least to date, and that's The Princess and the Frog from 2009, featuring Disney's first black princess, as well as a few controversies leading up to and after the film, as well as the incomparable Keith David.
Hell yeah.
I have got so much to give, I swear I do. I may not have 9 lives, but this one feels brand new. Yes, I've lived a good one. I have tried to be true. There are some things I never realized till I met you. How the way feel blue.